part of the Press Play Podcast Network.
From the Hyman Blog and the Press Play Podcast Network, I'm J.D. Hyman. As a black man living here in America, I am living proof that while all men were created equal, not all men are equal. We're here to dig into the American political system, explore and unearth experiences from the human condition, and be a catalyst for some hard conversations that need to be had, conversations that demand to be had. No matter what brought you here, I'm glad you came. Once again, my name is JD, and this is the Hyman Podcast. Chapter 12, Murdoch, Privilege, Power, and Secrets, Part 3. Previously on the Hyman Podcast. If you haven't listened to part one or two of this series, I would recommend that you stop right now and check it out. It's got lots of background information on what we're about to talk about. But if you're okay with spoilers, feel free to keep listening. But I highly recommend you check it out. So in the previous two episodes, we talked about Paul Murdoch in the morning of February 24th, 2019. The morning when, on the way home from a party, an egregiously drunk Paul crashed his father's speedboat beneath Archer's Creek Bridge, killing 19-year-old Mallory Beach. That was the beginning of the end for both Paul and his father, Alex Murdoch. We also talked about how Paul got to walk around a free man and how it took nearly 2 months before he was charged with a crime. Well, his freedom didn't last long because 2 years after his arraignment while awaiting trial, he and his mother were killed at the family's hunting lodge. In the process of investigating the murders of Paul and Maggie Murdoch, SLED, the South Carolina Law Enforcement Division, discovered something that caused them to open two investigations. One into the hit-and-run death of Stephen Smith, and the other into the death and missing estate money of one Gloria Satterfield. After seeing how epically he was about to go down, Alex tried to arrange his own suicide by using the bad aim of a former client turned drug dealer. Unfortunately, he's a bad shot, and all Alex has to show for it is a splitting headache and one more hospital bill. He's officially excommunicado from his own law firm and the Solicitor General's office, and now he's being accused of a lot more than insurance fraud, and not just by SLED, now by the feds. And that's where the story picks up today. Part 1, The Sons of Satterfield. Since the case has become so popular and the interests of judicial prudence, SLED has been very open about the case. On September 15, 2021, SLED announced that it was opening a criminal investigation into the death of Gloria Satterfield and the handling of her estate. Gloria Satterfield was the housekeeper and nanny for the Murdochs for over two decades. She was a member of World Harvest Church in Hampton. She liked tennis, loved her kids, and her favorite color was purple. Most of all, she will be remembered for her laughter and her outgoing personality. She was a lifelong resident of Hampton County and has two sons, Brian Harriet and Michael Satterfield. Two things stuck out about Gloria's death. The coroner was never notified, and an autopsy wasn't performed. Gloria died of an acute subdural hemorrage brought on by a stroke, so says her death certificate. Her death certificate also lists the manner of death as natural. It's likely the hospital was unaware that Gloria had tripped and fell down the steps and hit her head at the Murdoch family home, and they based their assessment off of all the available information they had at the time. So we have to discuss a few things. You need to know what a subdural hemorrhage is, and you also have to know the importance of the manner of death on the death certificate. The cause of death is what stops a person's heart from beating. The manner of death is what brought them to that point. There are only five manners of death: accidental, homicide, suicide, natural, and undetermined. In South Carolina, a medical doctor is only allowed to sign a death certificate if the manner of death is natural, or if that doctor is also a medical examiner. When Gloria fell down the steps at the Murdoch home, she developed an acute subdural hemorrhage. A subdural hemorrhage occurs when one or more blood vessels beneath the dura develops. This causes pressure to build on the brain. If left untreated, and depending on the severity of the bleed, the pressure against the brain can cause the brain to swell, which can be fatal. This means Gloria's death should have been classified as accidental, and it should have been treated as such, meaning a coroner should have gotten involved and an autopsy should have been performed to determine the factors that led to her death. Rumors have floated around the Lowcountry in the years since Gloria Satterfield died, and one of those rumors is that one of the Murdochs actually pushed Gloria down those stairs. I don't want to comment on rumors, but at this point, I absolutely would not be surprised if that turned out to be true. What is further troubling about her death is that Alex Murdoch supposedly played a part in orchestrating the wrongful death action against the company that insures his property. According to court documents, Murdoch met with Brian and Michael and arranged for his friends, attorney Corey Fleming and banker Chad Westendorf, to represent the boys and handle the insurance claim. And as part of the orchestrating, he would have to admit fault, yet the wrongful death suit doesn't list his name on the complaint. At some point, documents show where Chad signed for the disbursement of funds totaling $4.3 million, of which $2.7 million was supposed to go to her sons. They never saw a dime. The document is part of a court order allegedly signed by Lowcountry 14th Judicial Circuit Judge Carmen Mullen. But for some reason, this judge's order was never filed with the state and isn't part of any court docket or public record. The fact that it isn't calls much into question. How does all this go unnoticed? If Carmen Mullen wasn't the judge who approved the payment, who was? Does forgery need to be added to the litany of charges against Alex right now? So where did the money go? Well, I'm glad you asked. In recently released documents, two claims were made. One for $505,000 and a second for $3.8 million. According to copies of the canceled checks, a check for $505,000 was written out to Chad Westendorf and three checks totaling $3.5 million were written out to Forge, a shell company established by none other than Alex Murdoch himself. After considering the sons of Satterfield never saw a dime, authorities are convinced that Alex orchestrated the entire thing. Other lawsuits and court filings would indicate that this is how Alex scammed his law firm, by funneling clients' money disguised as payments into an offshore or an off-books account. The law firm has thrown Alex under the bus in every way that a person can be thrown under a bus, making it clear they had absolutely nothing to do with his Ozark-esque scheme. Lucky for Alex, it would seem he isn't going down alone. In a recent action, the South Carolina Supreme Court moved to issue a temporary suspension against Corey Fleming's law license. Lucky for Alex, it would seem he isn't going down alone. In a recent action, the South Carolina Supreme Court moved to issue a temporary suspension against Corey Fleming's law license. The suspension prevents Fleming from practicing law until an investigation be conducted and those results forwarded back to the High Court. If they determine that Fleming acted in an egregious manner, they can issue disciplinary action and sanction him, which could lead to him being disbarred. Alex is currently awaiting a similar fate. Here's the most interesting thing about Alex, Corey, and Carmen. They were all classmates. They all graduated from the University of South Carolina Law School in May 1994. Alex and Corey were even admitted to the South Carolina bar on the exact same date. You would think they were all part of some secret society, or maybe they have one of those I know what you did last summer stories. Whatever web of deceit has been woven, I think we found the people who were doing the weaving. The question is, why are these people connected with these cases in the ways that they are? And what other cases are they connected to? Unfortunately, we're not here to tell that story. But you know, all of this was after. The opening of the cases and the deaths of Stephen Smith and Gloria Satterfield, the opening of the case into the missing millions from Gloria Satterfield's estate, the resignation from the law firm his great-grandfather founded, the investigation for embezzlement from that law firm, after he decided to check himself into rehab for an opioid addiction. It was all after. It was all after he called 911 on September 4th, 2021. He was changing a tire on the side of the road, and a lone gunman approached him and pulled the trigger. Alex knew he couldn't keep his charade up for much longer. At this point, he had to know it was only a matter of time. The power that had once allowed him to go through life unscathed was rapidly deteriorating. The coming weeks were going to prove to be difficult for Mr. Murdoch. Time was not on his side. The case was public. It was in the A block of every news broadcast and above the fold in every paper. But he had one more tumble before his fall from grace would take him to rock bottom, and that came in the news that Alex not only knew the man who shot him, but that he'd actually arranged it. More on this after the break.
Hello, Brooks here with the Books with Brooks monthly book club podcast. Here's how Books with Brooks works. We read one book a month and then we talk about it. Classics like Stephen King's The Shining, debut novels like We Are the Brennans by Tracy Lang, and tons of other compelling, life-changing stories, one book and one month at a time. So come read along with us and then listen in.
Want to hear more about your favorite TV shows and movies that are on countless streaming services?
Then listen to Up Next with your new favorite hosts, me, Kristen Aviles.
And me, Christina Walter.
Every other week, we'll highlight one genre, but two movies or TV shows, one old and one new.
We'll let you know what's hot and what's not from your favorite
or least favorite
streaming services.
And be sure to stay tuned to the end of each episode where we shout out an artist whose name you should know for their talent in the industry.
So follow us to stay up to date with your favorite hosts from Up Next,
a part of the Press Play Podcast Network.
Part 2. There's Always the Basement. The murders of my wife and son have caused an incredibly difficult time in my life. I have made a lot of decisions that I truly regret. That was a sole statement released by Alex Murdoch after he confessed to arranging his own suicide. His plan was for a man named Curtis Smith to kill him. He provided him with a gun and gave him one job. Kill him. His exact words, "I want you to shoot me in the head." Alex's defense attorneys would contend that this former client-turned-personal drug dealer took advantage of Alex. But you know what they say about the best-laid plans of mice and men? They often go awry. And it's safe to say that Alex Murdoch was right on brand with his latest scheme, because the gunshot wound was superficial at best, an entry and an exit wound, and apparently nothing to write home about. Smith contends that Alex sustained the shot because he refused to carry out the final wishes of Mr. Murdoch, who turned the gun on himself. Mr. Smith attempted to wrench the gun away from Alex, and in the skirmish, the gun discharged a single round. Alex called the police and indicated that a man had shot him while he was attempting to service his vehicle on the side of the road. Alex was rushed to the emergency room, where he was treated for his injuries and released not even 2 days later. Not wanting the police officials to engage in a fruitless and unnecessary manhunt, he told the police that he had planned the whole thing, and with that, he was finally arrested. Surprising, isn't it? That's where he draws the line. After hopping and skipping over it so many times in the past, was it that both his son and wife were dead and he was finally having a crisis of conscience? The law firm recently updated their message to the public, as well as with a new statement condemning Alex, his actions, his apparent opioid addiction, and the damage he had done to the firm, and the damage she had done to the firm's image to the public. It says, in part, "We were shocked and dismayed to learn that Alex violated our principles and code of ethics. He lied and stole from us. no member of PMPED was aware of Alex's schemes. When we learned he betrayed our trust, we requested his resignation immediately. We have read the media reports about the lawsuit and settlement resulting from the death of Gloria Satterfield. If these reports are accurate, we are stunned at what occurred. You can count on us to operate our firm in an honorable and transparent fashion. Alex was arraigned on charges of insurance fraud, conspiracy to commit fraud, along with filing a false police report. When pressed by investigators as to why he arranged for Smith to kill him, he said it was so that his son could collect a $10 million life insurance policy. He said he would have committed suicide in a more traditional manner, but he wanted Buster to get the insurance money. The thing is, most insurance policies will pay out against a suicide if the policy is older than 2 years, but his lawyering skills are questionable anyways. He was released on his own recognizance, surrendered his passport, and checked himself into an out-of-state drug rehabilitation center. As of the time of this recording, a trial date has yet to be set. Alex Murdoch, Paul Murdoch, Corey Fleming, Chad Westendorf, and if she's involved, Judge Carmen Mullen, are all examples of what happens when power goes to your head. You step on anyone and everyone beneath you so that you can get to where you are. The story of Alex Murdoch and his family isn't an especially new story. It's just recent and fresh, and everyone's talking about it. It involves death and drugs and millions of dollars, so it's sexy. But how these people got to where they are, that's called privilege. I call it privilege because not everybody can get away with what these people did. I certainly couldn't get away with half of this. Paul Murdoch was a drunk, crazy person, and someone got killed, and he spent not a single day in jail. I described earlier the boat accident and how it was completely and totally avoidable. That's because 2 years prior to the boating incident, Paul was charged with underage possession of alcohol. And guess what? Two of his friends from the boating accident were also charged, so they really learned their lessons. Not. But the charges against Paul were dropped after he completed an alcohol diversion program, and as it turns out, that was super helpful. Maybe Alex, instead of trying to get his son off without so much as a slap on the wrist, should have committed him to a psych ward, or at the very least, an alcohol rehabilitation center. But again, I'm not here to judge anyone's parenting skills. Actually, I take that back. The truth is, Alex and Maggie were not very good parents. They were actually really bad at it. I know parents can't always control their kids, but they can raise them to make better decisions than that. A child's prefrontal cortex isn't fully developed and matured until their early 20s. This is the part of the brain that is responsible for executive function. What's the first area of executive functioning? Impulse control, thinking before acting. And research shows us that alcohol disrupts and damages a developing prefrontal cortex. So not only was he at an age where his decision-making skills were immature, but his overall ability was impaired. He'd clearly been a drunk since early in his teens, and he wasn't showing any signs of slowing down. Based on his actions in the emergency room that night, he was definitely a few benders away from a sexual assault charge, and would his father be there to save the day for that? Alex and Maggie set their kids up for failure. They didn't teach them responsibility. They taught them that daddy would always be there to get them out of a jam, as with the shiny example of Paul not interested in calling for medical assistance, but is this a grandpa-sized problem or do I call dad? And so Alex showed up and thought he was going to Olivia Pope the problem away. And as it turns out, he wasn't able to handle it after all. I guess in trying to take his own life, he wasn't willing or able to take responsibility for his own actions. Maybe it's too much of a stretch to hope that he teaches children to take responsibility of their actions. But maybe some good came from all of this. So if Paul hadn't been an alcoholic, and if they had taken an Uber that night instead of a boat, then Mallory would be alive. then perhaps Paul and Maggie would never have been killed and Sled wouldn't have found evidence that led them to Gloria Satterfield's wrongful death suit, and the Satterfield boys never would have come after Alex, and perhaps to this day, he and his cohorts would be scheming millions of dollars from clients from his own law firm. Maybe this needed to come out into the light of day to expose his long hidden secrets. Maybe it's better this way. I hope America recognizes the amount of privilege that went into all of this. How it took a bunch of dead people and literal millions of missing dollars for someone to get charged with a crime. For someone to spend a little time in jail. I hope America recognizes the trappings of the rich, white, and elite and how they use their power and influence as weapons of mass destruction. How they use it to cover up the sordidness and corruption. How they use it to cover up one misdeed after the next. I hope the families of Stephen Smith and Gloria Satterfield and Mallory Beach get a little bit of justice. So as Alex awaits his trial, he has nothing to do but wait. I hope he uses this time to take stock of the life he's built, the one that's come crashing down around him, the one that went up in flames in an epic fashion. This isn't the end of the story for Alex Murdoch, but for all intents and purposes, there's no one left to charge with anything. Unless there's another criminal mastermind walking around Hampton County, he's going to catch the business end of all of this action. Maybe he's planning his next move. Maybe he has millions of dollars of stolen, well-laundered money to fall back on. Whatever the case may be, right now he's met his match. It seems he's tired of running. He has been hauled in and out of court as of recently, and most recently, he was yanked out of his rehabilitation facility so that he could answer for his part he played in the scam that revolved around the millions of missing dollars from Gloria Satterfield's estate. You know what they say? Those who push the limits discover that sometimes the limits push back. Maybe he was dealing with a profound case of existential ennui. Perhaps that's how he found the broad side of rock bottom. Too bad for him though, because he's about to find out that rock bottom has a basement. My name is JD Hyman, and this is the Hyman Podcast. I'll see you next time. The Hyman Podcast was written, edited, and produced by myself. Share with guests, Whitney Hall and Mary Louise Layton co-produce and research. Cover art and branding by Kevin Aki. The theme music was composed and produced by Jim Yosef with additional music license from Epidemic Sound. The Hyman Podcast is a production of the Press Play Podcast Network. Press Play is staffed by Chase Smith, our CEO and fearless leader, iService Chief Operating Officer, and Brooks May is the Chief Creative Officer. To learn more about the network, sponsorships, guest appearances, or if you're interested in launching your own podcast on our network, visit us on the web at www.pressplaypodcast.com. To learn more about this podcast, our mission and vision, or for sponsorship information, please visit us on the web at www.jdhyman.com.